Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. Today on the show, we have more news than you can shake a stick at. As always, I'm your host, Maine, here with my co-host,
Emil.
Aside from the news this week on the show, we are going to recap the UAE JJF Grand Slam in Abu Dhabi, Fight to Win 97 in Sacramento, California, the Third Coast Grappling Championships in Dallas, Texas, the UAE JJF King of Mats. We are also going to preview the 2019 IBJJF Euros, Fight to Win 98, Marianas Pro Japan, and Marianas Pro Korea.
Holy shit, that's a lot.
Welcome to January, Emil. We've had a nice couple weeks off.
We back on our bullshit.
We back. How you doing, Emil?
Doing pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I went to PT this week.
Yeah, you're looking better, man.
Yeah, my knees don't hurt as bad. My legs don't hurt as bad. It's good. So we have a gang of news this week. So where do you want to start?
I want to start with you finally realizing that, you know, going to the doctor is important.
I mean, I realize that now, and I'm doing it.
Okay.
So, good. Woo for me.
Keep going, man.
So, in the biggest news of the week, like I want to kind of jump out at the beginning and say it. Andre Galvao versus Gordon Ryan.
Yeah, I feel like the news here is like that they talked some shit on the internet. You know, like
so it's funny. I was pulling my notes up for the week, you know, because throughout the week, if something newsworthy comes up, I write it down in a notepad, and then we talk about it on the following week. And on, like, Wednesday or someday, Galvao posted that I Am the King post. And I was like, that's kind of interesting. Is he out of retirement? I know he has a super fight with Penna at ADCC 2019. So I was like, is he back again? He's doing more stuff. And then I was like, okay, that'll be a piece of mention, like, if he's back. And, like, 2 days went by, and the Gordon thing came out, and it blew the fuck up. Yeah. Gordon got in it. Kai Otero's like, I'll fight you in the gi.
Oh, dude, Kai Otero fucking.
I would watch either of those matches, but then I realized that I would watch Kaio, Gordon, or Galvao in any matchup.
Yeah.
It's like, those are guys I'll watch regardless. So it's like, okay, if they do it, like, I'll be excited. I'll watch it.
It's crazy because, like, I don't peg Kaio for, like, a shit talker, you know, like. So for him to just like come
kind of out of nowhere,
swinging,
it was like,
at
was
Gordon
like,
too. Like
it was definitely an interesting development. He posted the clown picture of him. I was like, that was kind of weird.
I thought it was hilarious.
It was really
dude.
Funny, but it was just like out of nowhere. Kyle was just like, I'll fight you in the gi. And like, wait, what? What are we doing?
Everyone's
now?
Fucking Everyone. Coming out
you
of
saw,
the woodwork.
You saw Josh posted a picture of him.
Yo, Gordon, why are you ducking Josh Weinstock, man?
In a sumo for fake money.
Why are you ducking
Josh
him?
Picked the fattest picture he could have picked of him. I think he's fat. He's definitely fatter in that picture than he is now.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
So that
Noodle
happened.
King.
So then Star-Lord came out and was like, yo, $300,000 for the... Because Gordon originally was going to put up $50,000 for the matchup. And they were like, all right, make it $100,000. Then it was $50,000. Then it was $100,000. And then Star-Lord was like, $300,000.
So
you going to do this?
Star-Lord is the...
Josh LaDuc.
That's right. Josh LaDuc. He runs Zapatero, Gamblers, that stuff.
Yeah.
He's put on almost, I think, what, like 20...
18,
like,
I think 17 or 18 events
yeah.
at least under that. Under
He's
the
a legit
thing.
Promoter. Like, he absolutely, I believe him when he said, like, he was putting up $300,000.
There's a couple people that would have said that I would have believed. I would have believed him. I would have believed Seth for Fight to Win. I would have believed Eddie Bravo, and I would have probably believed, like, ACBJJ. Any other promoter, I would have been kind of like, I know how
what
much you're paying.
What about Henry Gracie?
You're just making me laugh super loud in the mic. Halleck, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah. Halleck.
Metamoris.
That's right.
300K, like, you're not getting paid. Man. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you that check,
that's monopoly
that check
money.
Is not going to clear. So that was big news. And then to top that off, Galvao was like, I'm worth $1 million. And everyone kind of went, but are you? Like, really? Like, don't get me wrong. He deserves it. But you're not going to ever recoup that money on a grappling match. Like, ADCC is one of the top paying out events that we know of.
Right.
And the absolute division, you win $50,000.
Right.
And, like, it's huge money.
So, I'm curious. Like, I don't know what, like, viewership rates are for these events. You know, like, I'm guessing in the tens of thousands, like, for the top events.
Yeah,
and at that point, you're talking about, like, what, like a $50 probably or more pay-per-view just to break even? Like, that's...
We're going to see something interesting with the pay-per-view for Inch by Inch TV for the combat jiu-jitsu thing. But that's on Fight Pass now.
I love grappling.
I would be hard-pressed
to pay
for a $50 pay-per-view.
$50 or more? You know, like, that has to just... Like,
sorry, we would do it for the show because we have to, but as a casual fan,
the
like...
The only people who could ask me for that is Quintet. If they have a stellar team lineup and they wanted to do pay-per-view, I would consider that.
Because their events have routinely been that exciting. It's interesting, but it's...
But, like, just to see, like, a bunch of super fights and, like...
But the thing for, like, $1 million, it's like, man, like, that's unobtainable. It's an unobtainable amount of money for that matchup.
Yeah.
And we talked about it a little before we recorded. You're like, they're both going to come out, like, not to lose.
Right. It's, like, when you have $1 million, whether or not it's for charity... Well, I'm sure there's a big difference between charity and, like, winning it yourself. But, like, that's just so much pressure that, like, you have to bring... an airtight game. Like, you can't come in to, like, just try some crazy shit. Like, you're gonna come in and I think be probably more conservative
it's
than normal.
It's an astronomical amount of money.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was really interesting. It blew up. It's still in the process of blowing up. This is Monday night when we're recording.
I do think, so this is basically so far just a bunch of internet shit talking. I do think that the big piece of actual news is that Star-Lord put up $300,000. I consider that legit. And that is probably the most amount of money for a single grappling event. You know, a grapple match.
I think that's
yeah.
the most amount of money I've ever seen or ever heard about. I think ACBJ, there's rumors that those are six-figure contracts, but that's broken up over a couple different events. So, like, up to six figures if you compete on X number of events.
Right.
So it's, like, that's up to, like, 100K or more than that. But there's... No one quite knows how those contracts are worded because those are so pretty guarded contracts.
Yeah, they're super opaque.
Yeah, so that happened. That was interesting. Do you have anything else on this? It was interesting, but it's at this point right now.
That's
like
it.
You said,
I'm done talking
internet
about it.
Shit talking.
Yeah,
on into actual news that we're super excited about.
Yeah, so Fight to Win announced that they are going to start doing professional judo.
I think they announced like a one-off match at least.
Yeah, I think so. I remember Seth. Remember he had like a couple weeks ago that like really like
he's like we're looking for a 185 pound black
belt. No. This is the one I'm talking about, the super nebulous thing he was wearing the suit and he was like, you know, some big stuff's in the works. Like,
you think that's what this was?
Dude, I think this is a fucking big deal. Like,
it's a huge deal because Seth comes from a judo background. Like, Seth was on the national
team. He's
a black belt in judo. Yep. Like, he's a legit judoka. And, like, he's been in that world of judo since he was young. And so it's really interesting because he's at Taizen. He knows the sport. They're doing an old school judo, like, lineup, like leg grabs, like two Ippons to win. And then, like, some groundwork. It's really cool. Like, go read the rule set for this. This looks like it's actually been announced now.
I think it's going to be fucking amazing because, like, we have so much talent in the judo community because internationally it's a larger sport than jiu-jitsu. And yet, like, the judoka, like, don't have the same professional opportunities. Like, they do get paid from their tournaments.
Right.
But
IJF does pay for open tournaments, major tournaments, world tournaments. They pay the judokas.
But then after that cycle, after being on, you know, your national team,
once you've retired out of it, there's no masters for judoka.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, at least, sorry, I'm going to kind of speak out of my ass here because we follow judo. I follow judo a little bit, not nearly as much as I would like to, but with all the jiu-jitsu we cover, there are only so many hours of the day. Go back and listen to our first couple shows where we tried to cover Sambo, Judo, Jiu-Jitsu, and Sumo.
Right.
And it's just too much for, you know, the team we have now. I would love to cover Judo in more depth, but so a little of this is talking to my ass because I can't cover Judo as closely as I'd like to, but there's not like a master. There's no super fights for Judo. There's not like a master's event. Like, there's not – I think Copa Podia does one old school Judo. They started something recently as well, but it doesn't have the same – framework that jiu-jitsu is building with the super fights, and like, you can continue to compete after your prime.
New promotions coming out now. There's more promotions than I can list, and you know, previously for judoka to make money after, you know, if they're top level and making the national teams afterwards, they're transitioning to MMA, like Kayla Harrison and Ronda Rousey.
Yep.
You know, or some of them come to jiu-jitsu, like
Satoshi Ishii.
Yep. Like Travis Stevens.
Yep.
So it's nice to see, like, okay, yeah, a promotion is picking this up. And then, you know, all it takes is one kind of successful promotion to really, like, blow shit up.
Fight to win.
Or, yeah. I remember Metamoris coming out. Dude. And, like, there wasn't really promotions the same way?
There definitely been super fight promotions that have happened, but Metamorphs was like the first big one to come out and go like, oh, this is a spectacle. This is an event. This is like a big ass deal.
Right.
And then you should watch and then do another one.
All this shit came out after that. Like, yeah. as problematic as they
EBI,
were.
EBI, Fight to Win, all those come out kind of after Metamoris there. And yeah. that's, I think, the dawn of like the big, huge super fight movement that we've seen with promotions putting on their style of super fight with their own rules, looking for their own guys yep. that are promoting their own style of exciting action.
Right. So I'm hoping that this is the same case with judo right
Dude,
now.
I'm super excited. I love watching judo, but I just don't have enough time to cover it. Yep. So I am so excited for this announcement.
Yep, me too.
It's awesome.
Big news.
Speaking of big news, have you heard the IBJJF rumors?
No, what rumors
so,
are these?
So there's a rumor floating around, and I've heard in a couple different places from a couple different people and sources that the IBJJF is looking at adding heel hooks into their events.
No shit.
Yeah. And so that's all I know, really. I
like these idea of mysterious sources talking to Maine, like...
Oh, no. No one's talked to me. I've just seen a couple things on the internet, on a couple other podcasts, and...
On the deep web somewhere.
There's people
talking to Eddie Bravo.
They wouldn't tell Bravo that.
Nah, you're right.
But there's people in California talking about, like, yeah, they're looking at... Or, like, they're hearing that they're looking at implementing, basically adding heel hooks into the IBJJF rule set. And I think that's huge, because every other major thing at a Nogi black belt level has those. Like,
yeah.
The IBJJF is the big dog that doesn't have those.
Their argument about, like, injuries is kind of moot, because we see now weekly basis, like, different promotions dealing with heel hooks fine. So why they're not allowed there? At this point, the only reason not to allow them is because you're afraid of the rule set.
Like, you're afraid of Americans coming in and being really good at them.
Yep, exactly.
Which is why they were kind of like, everything was taken out of
the You scared, IBJJF? Don't be scared, homie.
So that'll be super exciting. I hope that they modernize their rule set eventually, especially even at a black belt level, to allow that, because you get this jiu-jitsu that's kind of like, especially in the 50-50, you get this weird jiu-jitsu that's like, all right, we're going to pretend like I can't do this, even though I totally can.
Right.
And it... At a black belt level, especially at an elite black belt level, like, the guys know they're there.
Yep.
The guys that are winning your world titles at IBJJF and in Nogi are your same guys that are winning ADCC and competing at that level and competing on rule sets that do allow it, and they're not getting their legs blown apart. So at a black belt level, like, let's stop playing and let's add them back in. So I think it's really cool that there are rumors floating around that they're going to add that in, because I started hearing this probably 2-3 weeks ago, and I've heard more and more about it since then, so... It may be nothing, but it could be coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they did relax the reaping rules, so who knows?
What'd they relax it for?
Now it's no longer... This was last year. They
no longer an instant DQ?
That's right. It's a warning now.
It's like, hey, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Yeah.
So in other news, in a section I want to call Today in Beef, we kind of talked about this earlier, but... Dylan Danis and Jake Shields got into it. Not really got into it. Dylan posted a picture of him holding Jake Shields instead of me hugging my son. And Jake Shields went off in what was one of the funniest things I saw all
week. Shields sunned him. Like, it's not even close. Like, I just don't know how, like...
He's Dylan, like, I beat you in your own sport.
I'm old enough to be your dad, and I beat you in your own sport.
It's like, your biggest accomplishment is sucking Connor's dick. I was like, Jesus. And then all the comments were like, 10-8, 10-8, 10-8, 10-8. And then a bunch of comments were like, 2-0, 2-0, 2-0. And it just made me laugh so hard. In other Bellator news, we have AJ Agazarm basically announcing his Bellator debut for like January 26th, like coming right up.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. And everyone kind of like gives AJ a lot of shit, you know, deservedly or not deservedly, but he has a gang of amateur fights. I want to say he has like 5 or 7 amateur fights, and he's fighting a guy that's 3-1 or 3-0 as an amateur. Like, he's fighting a guy of similar level, like, amateur experience, but AJ should come out and perform really well for this, and I hope he does.
His skill set, I think, will transition pretty well to MMA.
That
but
pressure-heavy wrestling?
It is. I just, you know, for being a wrestler, we talked about this before, like, he hasn't... Like, I'm having difficulty remembering matches where he's really showcased his takedowns.
Yeah, he used his wrestling a lot at Brown Belt, and we've seen him use his wrestling in a little ADCC, but I don't really see him as like a come forward pressure heavy wrestler like you typically see in MMA, but he does have that skill set to fall back on. So like,
yeah, we'll
I foresee him doing very well. In all honesty, I'm really happy that Bellator is signing more and more of these jiu-jitsu guys because they get brought up a lot easier and we get to see them kind of grow and shine more than the UFC that kind of like really fucking throws you to the wolves in like two or three fights.
Yeah.
So I'm happy he's debuting there. I hope he does well. I might be the only one, but a lot of people will probably tune in to see him get punched in the face.
Dude, hey, I think he, of anyone I can think of, has a good skill set to transition to MMA. But speaking of MMA fighters who talk shit and get punched in the face.
Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
Got his black belt.
That's right.
So that was exciting. I said that to Emil, and he goes, okay. I'm like, all right, Emil, that's news. That's important and stuff. Like he's been training in the gi.
Yeah.
Like he's training in the gi. He's gone through the ranks. He's brown. Now he's got his black belt. Like I think that's really cool. Yeah. Hopefully he doesn't get triangled again.
Yeah.
By Anderson Silva. Let's see what else I got in news. Oh, yeah, and other MMA-related news. Gordon says, and I quote here. Actually, I quote because this is what I wrote down for my notes. Gordon says, fuck the gi, I'm doing MMA. I actually appreciate how Gordon brought this up. He was kind of like, he did a thing with Luke Thomas in the MMA Hour, and basically, like, I'm good in the gi. I can hang with these world-class guys in the gi. I don't like the gi. I like MMA. I don't want to spend 2 years doing something I don't like. I want to go do MMA. And I was like, I kind of respect that. Like, yeah. I want to see him perform and enjoy what he's doing the most. And if that's not the gi and he wants to go to MMA, I want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I totally agree. In fact, of no gi and gi, I lean more towards no gi. And
they'll love me no gi.
Yeah, no gi is fucking dope.
Like,
I like
gi because it's way harder and way more frustrating. I think for a guy like me, that's good. But like competition wise, if there's ever anything that like sign up for, always sign up for no-gi first. I love me some no-gi.
Yeah, so I'm cool with it. I think it's great. It's just a matter of him like, you know, now calling out people who specialize in gi feels even more weird, you know, especially since like a year ago he said he was going to be doing gi. I get that he's like not into it.
I really would love to. Again, I would much rather see BJJ guys stay in BJJ if there was money there, and I want to see them flourish in jiu-jitsu because I like watching jiu-jitsu more than MMA at this point.
If he loves MMA, that could be really fucking exciting.
Oh, no. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'll watch all of these grapplers. Like, there's not a high-level grappler match that I miss in MMA.
I wonder what weight class he would fight at.
That's kind of the discussion right now. Is he going to go 205? Is he going to go 185?
I feel like he's middleweight, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he probably walks around like 200 something.
Well, because he did that big fluctuation of weight for ADCC. I have no idea what he's walking around at right now, but I would assume he makes the cut to 85. Like, I don't really think he's a 205er.
Yeah.
Like, in MMA. Like, he's a big dude, don't get me wrong, but like...
Dude, and he can train with Weidman too? Like...
Yeah. That's... He's in a good place to do it. Like, I foresee him doing very well. Like, Gary Tonin looks really good.
Yeah. Yep.
Like... I hope he goes over to one, and I hope they do what they did with Tonin and like give him a couple matchups that are like tailor made to like really showcase his skills, you know, make him work, make him have to do some stuff, but some guys that he should be able to get to the ground and out grapple.
Yep.
I hope that we see better wrestling from him. We've seen him increase his wrestling. His wrestling's looked better and better, but he's going to need that in MMA. So if he enjoys MMA, best of luck to him. I hope he does well. I'm amped to see it. So one of the last pieces of news, Guinness Book World Records 2019 came out, and Buchecha is now in the World Records book for the most IBJJF world titles in the gi.
Congratulations, Buchecha. You finally made it. You're finally huge.
You're finally in a book that was really relevant in like the early 2000s.
That's right.
But hey, I'm happy to see Jiu-Jitsu in the World Records book finally for something.
Dude, they'll add anything in there. Anyway.
Why are you such a hater? God damn it, man. It's like,
because Josh isn't here. Someone's got to fucking do it.
It's probably why I like you. Yes. So there's two amateur events that are coming up that are really cool that are professional organizations that are putting on amateur events. High Rollers BJJ is putting on an event in Pittsburgh on March 30th and March 31st. You can sign up for that event. I think a couple of those divisions will give you an open spot into their upcoming pro tournament where you can win hella weed and compete on a showcased streamed stage. I think they're talking about getting it streamed, so they're actually going to really make an effort for this third one to like stream it, and it'll be available for streaming this time.
What's the rule set? Do you remember?
I don't know, man.
No idea.
Like, I did not expect a follow up question. From you.
Well, let me tell you, there's another amateur open finishers sub only. Has an open on February 23rd. It's going to be in Rockaway, New Jersey. It's an EBI rules format open. So if you're purple, brown, or black, it's 8-minute rounds. All submissions legal. Knock yourself out.
I want to say it's only like $80 too.
Yes,
I think so. I looked at registering it and then I blew my knee out and I was like, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe heal yourself.
Yeah, and that's what I decided to do, Mio. So I was looking at a bunch of tournaments coming up. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do all these. And then my knee was like, pop, 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 pop. And I was like, I'm going to take a rest for a minute and go to PT.
That's right.
So I think that's all we got for news. Dear Lord, this has literally been the longest news segment we've ever done in the history of the show.
Sweet.
Awesome. So let's get into the events.
Month. Yeah.
So we got a gang of events this weekend. Where do you want to start with this, Emil?
I want to start with King of Mats, man. It's one of my favorite events.
Yeah, you love King of Mats. Like, I like King of Mats, but you fucking love it.
Well, I love it because it's what I want in an event. It's a smaller sort of invitational high level. I mean, like, high level, like,
oh,
world,
yeah,
class.
All the dudes here look like, amazing,
like,
in the performances.
A ton of champions or near champions, and it's, you know, my favorite rule format, the UAEJJF. You know, I just love the format, and it's a professional thing too. So,
yeah, you win a bunch of money if you win.
Mm-hmm. So the way it works is, they invite 10 people within the same weight class. So,
or close,
close, yeah. But we'll call it the same weight class. And in this case, it's two groups of five. So, all of the people in Group A, a group of five people, will round robin each other. So they have a match versus everyone else. And then everyone in Group B round robins, and the people with the highest results, the highest records, and those records are points based on whether or not you get a submission or win by points or draw or lose. The top two people progress into the semifinals, and the top person from A fights the second place from B, and the top person in B fights the second place in A, and then whoever wins those matches goes on into the final. So it's dope, man. It's like, you know,
because you get to see all of the guys go into all the guys, or at least everyone in the group. So it's like, even if a guy loses, he's not just out. Where it's like, fuck, I'm not gonna see this goddamn matchup now. It's like, I'm still gonna see it unless somebody gets injured, which in this case, let me find his name, Satoshi. I'm blanking on the guys. Roberto Satoshi got injured in one of his matches, one of his early matches, so he was out. So there's a bunch of matches that I didn't get to see him in. I'm a big fan of him, so it sucks he got injured. He got like a leg injury in this, so we missed him in some of the matches. But if guys don't get injured, you get to see a big variety of matches. Even if guys lose, they continue to go on. So I like that. One loss does not necessarily preclude you from being the champion.
That's right. But you need consistency, and I think that's so dope. Like, it's at this level, to win a round robin, you have to be fucking amazing.
Oh yeah, dude, everyone here was just outstanding. So,
and we saw some really exciting jiu-jitsu too. So again,
oh,
I think UAE
also that six minute
I'm telling you, man.
I like, the more I watch, I think I say this every time, the more I watch that six, so UAE JJF, one of the big differences they have, very very similar rule set to IBJJF, but the biggest difference I think is they have a 6 minute match instead of a 10 minute match for black belts, and in this round robin format, and in general, it leads to more action. They're also super aggressive with stalling penalties.
So in Group A, we have Gabriel Argis, we have Espen Mathiasen, Kyle Soares, Hudson Mateus, and Lucas the Hulk Barbosa. That's just a fucking savage group. Group B, we have Roberto Satoshi, Ezeque Bahance, Manuel Hubamar, Diego Romalo, and DJ Jackson. Another stacked fucking
group. You didn't
group.
Fuck up any of those names.
No. Oh. Oh, look at that. I'm fucking learning finally. But this is what I'm saying is, like, those shit, man. Like, that's just, all of the matches are amazing. Like, they're just great matchups. So we're going to read through the group results just because there's a bunch of cool shit that we want to talk about in them.
So let's start with Group A. We had Gabriel Argis versus Espen Mathiasen. I always want to make that weird. And basically the highlight of this is Argis gets a pass with like 35 seconds left, then gets right to the back and gets a collar check from the back with like a Japanese finish, like right at the end.
Yeah, this was like, even though Espen lost this match, he has outstanding guard retention. I mean, like, I was just so fucking impressed. There were points where, like, you know, there was over under positions where he had his guard, where I feel like any mortal would have their guard pass, and he's able to just hook his leg across to the far shoulder and then re-guard. It was beautiful. And as good as his guard retention is, he does make a split second mistake, and Gabriel figures it out, times a perfect pass, fights him down for side control, and nearly takes the back, but ends up with a bow and arrow grip and just finishes that Japanese finish. So, in Group B, we have Roberto Satoshi versus Izaki Behance. And Izaki Behance wins 2-0 on points.
Just a points victory.
In Group A, again, we have Hudson Mateus defeating Caio Soares.
This was an exciting fucking match.
Yeah.
And it was a quick match.
Yeah. How long was that, man?
It was 23 seconds.
Yeah.
I timed it.
It's a fucking just amazing 50-50 armbar.
So Hudson just like goes 50-50 and then just like goes up, armbar, and you're like, oh, fuck, he got him. The first angle they showed you, you're like, what is he? Oh, does he get him? And then they show you the second angle, and it's like, God damn, that is a deep armbar.
It's funny, too, because like the commentary was amazing, but like they were
the commentary for this event was great. Super knowledgeable with all of the lapel positions, and they're doing – it was some of the best commentary I've heard in a while. They were doing predictive commentary for like, oh, he has this position. He has to avoid getting swept here, and that's like – I watch a lot of jiu-jitsu, and there was some positions that I don't know who the commentator was explaining that I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense there. Oh, yeah, that's what he's doing. Or I would look at it and like think about what I was watching, and the commentator would like walk me through. I was like, oh, shit, really, really good high-level gi commentator. I don't know who it was, and I'm really disappointed I didn't catch the name.
Yeah, he basically said exactly what needed to be said, which is that it's like – yeah, Hudson Mateus does this sometimes. That's just it. That was his insight.
Like, he's like, yeah, he's like, he does this.
He does this. Yeah. So anyway, back to Group B. We have Manuel Hibamar versus Diego Romalo, and Hibamar gets the submission. You want to talk about that, man?
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes here. Okay, so he has some nice like worm guard action here, and he just basically throws him over and gets like a really like nifty armbar from a worm guard. And again, this is where the commentator was like helping me, like, what am I watching? What is he doing? And I had to watch the sequence a couple times to like figure it out. It's still, I don't play a lot of those really complex lapel guards, so I am still having problems. And this is kind of not a failing, but this is just like me being open with the audience. Like, I'm still having a problem identifying exactly what's happening in each one of those positions and in each one of those like lapel transitions over.
Because it changes from week to week, man.
Yeah.
There's like new grips and shit all the time.
But we're seeing it used so much more by so many different guys. I think it's something I need to study more, especially if we're going to continue to do this show, which I intend to do for a long fucking time.
Thank you, Based Keenan.
Yeah, thanks, Keenan. You said it like in a nice way. I said it in an angry way. Like, man, it's so hard to follow stuff now.
Dude, I'm glad.
He posted a video this week of him basically like his organic process. He was talking about, he was doing
a
seminar.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. Yeah, yeah.
And he was Keenan starts to play a lot more rubber guard
he
now.
He called it a gubber guard.
I don't know. He plays rubber guard with the
rubber guard. I get it. Yeah. Okay.
With like his lapel over his own ankle, and then he like gets a cool sweep. And it's basically like,
he improvised a choke. Yeah, I don't want to get into it too much. But
I don't understand it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was really cool. But
Keenan is a wizard.
And he's starting to do that. We're starting to see so many more people play those like lasso guards and lapel guards and worm guards. And it's becoming part of that high-level gi meta. And it's something I need to study more, especially as I move up in rank and have to fight these monsters. And just in general, people have much better knowledge of how to use those like lower lapel guards.
You're getting ready for when you fight Hibamar?
Fuck no.
Okay.
Looking for Masters 3, baby.
Back to
what we were talking about.
Group A, we got Lucas the Hulk Barbosa defeating Gabriel Arges 3-0. This was a little frustrating because the match video started with 3 points already on the board.
Yeah, the match video starts and they're like, oh, Barbosa gets 3. And I was like, wait, what? And the match video starts in a reset. And I went, wait, what the fuck? And that's the only points that scored in the match. I was like, cool. I assume he passed the guard at some point.
Yeah.
And they ended up in this position. I don't know how it happened, but that's what he did. Hey. So if you know what happened, let us know.
Group B, we have DJ Jackson submitting Roberto Satoshi.
This was a weird match because, again, DJ looked fantastic. I love watching his like shin cutting back and forth because Toshi's got really, really good like retention, guard work, and gripping sequences. And you see Jackson is super low, pressured in, and like pressure passing. But he's doing some really cool stuff with his feet, and it's just, he just keeps jumping back and forth over the legs and basically getting Satoshi to turn his body downward, and then he's able to jump to the back. And eventually DJ gets over to like top side control, and he's working chokes, and Satoshi stopped the match for a second for an injury, and they've looked at it, and he looks like he has some sort of leg injury, but he continues to go, and DJ eventually just hits this wrist lock from top side control, and I was like, oh, damn. And I think Satoshi pulls out after this match. I think Yeah, I think that's the last match we see Satoshi in.
Dude, we see this happen a lot with wrist locks where, like, people... I feel like with wrist locks, people don't tap before there's, like, kind of serious injury.
I think
injury.
He was out for the leg injury.
Oh, you
think
so?
I think that's what took him out.
Okay.
But, like, the wrist lock was basically, like... DJ does this. It's like with the wrist lock with the chest inside control, which he just pops it in, and he's really good at that, especially with that frame. So, but it sucks that Satoshi got injured in this match. I couldn't tell if it was a knee or like a shin or what exactly happened. I haven't got a chance to look at it, but he's out. That sucked. But DJ has some really nice passing sequences in this that was really impressive to watch, and I enjoyed it.
So, Group A, we have Espen Mathiasen defeating Kyosaurus by submission.
Yeah, this was sweet.
This is a bow and arrow.
Yeah, Soares sweeps from the guard. Mateus, and so they go back and forth, and Espen hits an amazing roll through with the pants grip, takes the back, and then hits like a belly down bow and arrow choke, and it's just beautiful.
Group B, we have Isaki Bahens defeating Manuel Hibamar.
Man, I keep in my notes it's listed as Hibamar, and in the video it's Philo. Dude, this threw me off at the beginning so much. I was like, okay.
In general, this is a problem. Like, it's not specific to UAE JJF. Like, in general, in jiu-jitsu, just because you have all the family names in
Brazilian
culture plus nicknames.
All have four names
and
then nicknames. And so it's like, it was kind of super frustrating because Flo and UAE JJF have Hibamar listed in the videos as Philo, as Fiho or something.
Yeah.
And then in the results listed as Hibamar, and in the group orders listed as Hibamar.
Yeah.
So you're looking for the videos, you're looking for usually searching by last name because it's the easiest, and you're seeing all these Philo matches. You're like, okay, so I got to look it up. And it takes you a couple minutes to figure out, okay, these guys are these guys' names. If you don't remember everyone's and their four names and what they're going to be listed by. Because sometimes they're listed by the middle last name, sometimes they're listed by the last name, sometimes it's a nickname, not usually a nickname, but it just gets super confusing. I wish they would just list all the names and the nickname. I know it's going to be a really long title, but it makes it searchable and you avoid this problem where, like Kyle Caneto Soares, they list him as Kyle Soares. They list him as Kyle Caneto. They list him as he's listed as three different things in the match video, in the results, and in the groupings. So it's like hard to follow.
Yep. So back to it. Group B, we got DJ Jackson defeating Diego Romalo by advantage. In Group A, we have Gabriel Arges defeating Kyosaurus by referee's decision. Then we have a mismatch because Roberto Satoshi had to pull out, and that was versus Hibamar. Group A, we have Hudson Mateus defeating Espen Mathiasen 4-0. In Group B, we have Isaki Bahens defeating Diego Romalo by submission. In Group A, we have another missed match, and it was a little unclear why.
Well, hold on. That Bahens, you kind of skipped over how brutal that Bahens Diego Romalo match was. Like, dude, Bahens finishes a bow and arrow choke, and Romalo's head is, like, fucking sideways.
Lots of bow and arrow finishes, now that I think about it.
Dude, you always see a lot of bow and arrow. In the gi, like, on high-level guys, like, that is one of the... You never see a Renegade choke in the gi. You always see guys, like, grabbing that collar grip, and they're able to get low on the collar and just change that angle super fast.
But it's interesting. They don't bother going for a cross collar. It kind of makes sense. Unless you're Hodger. But from the back, yeah, I would also go for bow and arrow.
In gi is going to let you pass that hand all the way across. Like, you grab a collar, and then the motion, you're able to fall off to the side and keep control with the pants
grip. I remember
grip.
When I first learned this, my instructor was like, this is one of the chokes where you don't have to be as exact with where you get your grip. Because
you kind of got to get close. So it's like, there's like a probably 3-inch window.
I think it's
the
most forgiving gi, like, hand positioning choke that I can think of. Like, it's really, like...
I would agree.
You can grab pretty fucking low on
that.
Because
there's a
lapel.
Bunch of gi chokes that you have to be relatively exact with, or you have to make big adjustments if you're not where you need to be. But for the bow and arrow choke, like, it kind of just... Or the choke from the back, in quotes there, because it's listed a lot of times. It's listed sometimes as bow and arrow, listed as sometimes as choke from the back, because there's a number of gi chokes you can do from the back, but most of the time it's a bow and arrow choke. A couple times it's like a collar choke with a Japanese finish, which is basically like you have the bow and arrow choke grip, but instead of grabbing down for, like, the leg, you put the hand behind the head. We saw one of that in the early matches, but we see a lot of it. Is one of the most common finishes from the back.
Yeah. So we have Manuel Hibamar defeating DJ Jackson 9-0.
And these guys actually, they talked about, the commentary was really good. They talked about who had met the days before and then what the results of those matchups were. Because some of these guys came in just for this event, but a lot of these guys were also competing in just the regular UAE-JJF Open event, the one of the Grand Slam events for IBJJF, the one in Abu Dhabi. So because these guys are in the same division, a lot of them had met the previous day in this tournament as well. And this was one of the matchups.
Yeah. So we also have Gabriel Arges versus defeating Hudson Mateus by advantage. And my favorite fucking match, Espen Mathiasen defeating Lucas the Hulk Barbosa 2-1 on advantages. This was bonkers, man.
Yeah.
This match was fucking crazy.
We had lots of leg drivers from, like, odd positions. Both guys, like, yeah, this is a really fun back-and-forth match.
Yeah, so, like, it starts off with Espen pulling guard and Hulk doing his, like, furious passing. And Espen's able to get, like, kind of, like, the overhead sweep that we saw a lot in ADCC trials where someone's just pressuring way too much and they overcommit, get launched overhead, and then we get a basically a really full-blown sweep here. And there was a rash of sweeps that we saw in ADCC East Coast trials that were exactly this. So we talked about that before. You can go back and watch it. So Hulk responds with an awesome single leg sweep. And it's just like this incredible back and forth of like sweeping. And then Espen gets a ridiculous near back take and near bow and arrow choke. Speaking of the bow and arrow, which is super popular.
Dude, no one, like, he's like, you grab the collars and you go.
So he's just a little too high on Hulk and he loses it, but he gets two adds for nearly taking the back and nearly getting a submission. So he's able to win in the like last part of the match right before it ends off of this amazing setup. So he still looked amazing even though he didn't progress.
It was a fun-ass matchup. You should definitely go back and watch it. So we're into the final match now of Route B, match 10 of 10. What, technically not 10 of 10 because there were some guys that pulled out, but we had a Zaki Behance versus DJ Action. DJ Action. I was reading my notes as I was reading that. Versus DJ Jackson. Dude, his name should be DJ Action Jackson.
That's right.
So there was lots of standing. There was a little bit of guard back and forth, and eventually Behance gets the split decision on this. So, again, I like that they have three referees for these, and there was a lot of split decisions, which I'm not as much of a fan of, but I do like that it's not one referee, especially for an event like this that pays out bonkers of money. Like, I think that's a good thing. So, on to the semifinals.
So, we have Gabriel Arges progressing, and he faces off against Manuel Hibamar. He wins 4-2. On points. This was an interesting match. The jiu-jitsu was great, but one thing that was pretty remarkable here was we saw an extended replay happen.
Yeah.
You know, like there was.
We've seen replays from UAE-JJF before, but this one was like it stopped everything.
Like 3 or 4 minutes or something.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
It was at least 3 or 4 minutes.
So what ended up happening was Arges was doing an incredible passing sequence with Hibamar. On the ground in guard, and he barely gets around the legs. I mean, like, this is what took so long.
I missed,
to determine.
Like, when they stopped, I had missed what had happened.
Yeah.
I was watching, like, okay, they stopped. And the guy's explaining what's happening. It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
So, yeah, Arges gets around the legs just for a split second, and then Hibamar is able to do this awesome, like, technical stand-up to, like, double leg and gets a sweep there, but it doesn't count as a sweep. It's counted as a reversal because Arges had gotten around the legs for that split second. So that was a really important replay because it meant 2 points, and that really was a deciding factor.
That was the deciding factor.
Exactly.
I mean, he wins by 2 points. That's so right. It was a beautiful. I mean, the sequence itself was beautiful, and then like the gamesmanship, and then watch this. This is high-level jiu-jitsu. This is what high-level jiu-jitsu looks like, and this is why we should have replay, especially with these big events. This isn't the world championships. This is the king of mats, and they went, oh, we might have made a mistake. Cool. Let's do a replay. And they did it, and they went, okay, yep, this is what happened on rewatch. It was beautiful. Like, this is what should happen in jiu-jitsu, because if you want high-level competition, you're now dealing with guys that are probably higher level than your ref.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like...
Not probably, definitely.
And so it's like, if you're going to be reffing those guys, you have to be ready to like, hey, I'm going to make a mistake occasionally because these guys are so high level, they understand the rules or don't understand the rules to a degree where it's like, it may be necessary for us to go back and look at what we've done. And so it's big for the sports that they have this. I'm happy that they use it, especially in an event like King of Mats. On to the next match.
So we have Izaki Bahance defeating Hudson Mateus on an advantage. And this was... really peculiar because Hudson, so Izaki Bahance had one advantage and Hudson Mateus at the end of the match had zero, but they wiped one of his advantages.
They did a callback.
Yeah.
Which I love the motion for the callback because it's like, bring it back, baby. Yeah. And they do a little tap on the head.
It was peculiar. I remember there was a little bit of confusion as to exactly like what was going on there. But it happens. So in our final, we have Gabriel Arges versus Izaki Bahance. And this was an outstanding, like, so this match starts off with a sweep, and it starts off with
this
a star.
This is exactly the kind of match you want in a finals event of this caliber with these guys. This is the type of jiu-jitsu you want.
So this is their sixth match of, like, brutal, absolutely exhausting talent. And so it starts off the bat with Izaki scoring off of a star sweep, which I love the star sweep. And there's at this point it gets really technical and it slows down and they actually get some stalling calls against them.
Because they're both, you're kind of sitting there like in this very, very odd tied up position on the legs with the lapels. Again, I really can't begin to describe exactly the position they're in because I don't fully understand the position. I'm going to be straight up, go watch this, look at where they are. I cannot explain it in my words.
So at some point, Bahance is in guard and he starts like furiously fighting for kind of like a, it looks a little bit like a baby bolo. He's trying to like kind of go behind
baby bolo
instead of like, you know, knocking Gabriel down. He gets to his legs and he comes up. He looks like he's trying to do like a double leg from behind, and
yeah, he's, and his head's like right there, and he like grabs the front of like the shins almost.
Gabriel steps out, but then Izaki is able to get a really good grip on a single leg,
and you're like, oh, he's gonna finish that.
Oh, and he fucking slams Gabriel down into the mat, and Gabriel pops right back up, does a runner's escape, back steps over, and at this point they're both standing, and then he's kind of like, he's not
they're
quite on the back,
and I'm standing, yes, yelling at my computer screen like,
this sequence
shit
is fucking bonkers. So he doesn't quite have the back, he's kind of like on the side, and then just, this is Gabriel is on the side of Izaki Bahance, and he does a beautiful judo trip. I'm just like into mount, and
you know what's good when you trip into mount.
You trip into mount, and this whole sequence is like in a second or two. It's like it happens very quickly, and
you blink, you miss it.
And Izaki Bahance rolls, and Gabriel takes his back, and then just starts ripping. I mean, I can't even call this a rear naked choke. It looked like he was trying to
head off. He was trying to win money, and he was on his back, and he was like, if I get your neck,
dude,
I win dollars.
He had Izaki Bahance's head turned like where his chin was touching his shoulder, just ripping.
You can't see this. Emil's making the face and turning his head away from the mic as he talks.
Yeah, it's just, it was incredible. He doesn't get the tap, but like, just,
but he wins.
He wins in commanding fashion.
Beautiful finale to what was a great event overall. Again, the matches are up. Aside from there's some audio issues here and there that are kind of weird. Like the audio desynced, or like I was getting like every half of every third word.
Yeah, but it was still totally watchable.
Yeah.
One thing that I really liked,
the Barbosa match, we're missing part of that, but every other match, it's up and it's watchable.
One thing I really loved about this event was like the chanting that was going on in the background.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was really dope. I liked that.
I was like, shit, they're fucking getting into this. I'm getting into this.
It made it more
this,
like, thematic. Like, sometimes
it felt like you felt like you were watching a sport,
yeah,
where people were there to like watch and enjoy the sport, as opposed to like a bunch of guys that are waiting to compete or have just competed or on these guys' teams. It was like, oh, these guys are like here to watch these guys compete in the King of Mats. Like, yeah, this feels like a sporting event. And the production quality on this event was amazing. Yep. This is what, like, professional judo looks like. They had multiple camera angles on booms. They had a control center.
Dude,
they had
picture-in-picture.
They had a walkout camera. Like, this felt like a real professional, like, major tournament-style event.
Not felt like. It was. Like,
it was.
This is the pinnacle of... For me, this is my favorite, like sort of regular single person tournament event.
It's a world tournament event.
I can't remember the last time I watched one of these and didn't have fun. So
go back, rewatch it. Great event, great performances, more high level shit than I will ever do, and it was a good ass weekend for jiu-jitsu. So we're really quickly going to go through the UAE JJF. Regular Abu Dhabi Grand Slam results. Kind of hard to find these because on the Flow Grappling website, both events link to the King of Mats results. Because
it was so fucking good.
So fucking good, you had to link it twice.
That's right.
So onto the regular results for the regulars tournament, for the standard like event that they run for the Grand Slam event. The 56-kilogram division was Beto Oliveira defeating Masaki
Todokoro.
You do, okay. 62-kilogram division, we get Iago George defeating João Miau for 8-8, one advantage. 69-kilogram division, we had Paulo Miau defeating Thiago Brava. We had in the 77-kilogram division, I'm not doing words well, Emil.
Diego Romalo defeating Levi Jones Leary on advantage. 85 kilograms, we have Lucas the Hulk Barbosa defeating Hudson Mateus by referee's decision. 94 kilograms, we have Adam Wardzinski defeating Renato Cardoso by an advantage. 110 kilogram, we have Herbert Santos defeating Ricardo Evangelista by an advantage.
Cyborg. It's not Cyborg. That's Ricardo Evangelista. I always do that. It's not Abreu. I always want to make Ricardo Evangelista Cyborg, and it's Ricardo Abreu.
So in the women's results, we have Adrian Oliveira defeating Maisa Bastos. Okay,
yeah,
so it's
Bastos.
A typo over here.
62-kilogram division, we have Bianca Basilio defeating Bayan Bassano. In the 70-kilogram division, we have Therma Silva defeating Samantha Cook. And in the 90-kilogram division, we have Gabriela Pisana defeating Natalia DeJesus. So overall, good weekend for UAE JJF. Go back and watch them. There's a couple of events that I have not, a couple of matches that I have not got to see from this bracket yet, and I'm super excited to go back and rewatch. So we're not going to talk about those because I haven't got a chance to see them yet because it was a jiu-jitsu field weekend. So moving on to our recap of the Third Coast Grappling, their inaugural event, and it was a lot of fun. These guys are using a really cool rule set that I like a lot. That is partially submission only and partially points. Like, it's not technically submission only, but what they're doing is they have it is all black belt matches are 10 minutes long, all other matches are 7 minutes long, and it's the first fighter to score 11 points or a submission, and they don't have advantages.
So they have a really awesome system to prevent stalling and to keep things exciting. They have yellow cards that they can give out. If you have a second, basically they give you one warning with a yellow card. If they give you a second yellow card, they'll stand you up from whatever position you are. So they're like, fuck you, you're really not doing anything. If you get a third one, then you have to forfeit 20% of your prize money. So
dude,
it's,
I like it.
It's
like,
kind of like pride rules stuff.
We
you know?
Saw dudes in this event come out guns a-blazing.
Yeah.
And so it was funny. When I was watching this event, I was like, why are there so many guys we've seen and covered on it before? I was like looking down, like, took me a couple matches. I was like, oh, right, they're both in Texas. This one was in Dallas, on it. Invitational runs in Austin, Texas. I was like, oh, that makes sense why we're seeing so many guys that are crossing over into this event. So it was a lot of fun. So the overtime is a little different here, and it was
it's a sudden death, and it comes like they start you in position. Like, you don't start from neutral.
You get to choose your position
if you win a coin flip. I don't know how I feel about this. This feels a little weird. Like, I don't know.
Most guys chose guard, basically, because either you choose the position, and then the other person chooses. So whoever wins the coin flip chooses the position, and the other person chooses top or bottom.
Right.
So most guys chose guard because guard's a pretty neutral position. It's like, okay, if I choose guard, best case scenario, I'm in the position of guard I want. Worst case scenario, I'm on top or the bottom. So it's like most guys chose guard in this position. I also like they had a small wall in the back of their ring, and they would let guys use that wall until they reached like a stopping point, and they'd move them back to the center. I really liked it. It made for some interesting like cage grappling, like throughout the event. I usually don't like fence grappling. Like, we see it a lot in SUG, but for this, it worked really well, and it made a couple positions like kind of dominating that wouldn't normally be as dominating. I enjoyed that. It was one of those little things I was like, oh, shit, they're not breaking it up on the fence. I like that.
So there was one exception to this rule set, and that was the main event. Keenan Cornelius versus Tex Johnson. I guess Keenan was like, well, what's up with this new rule set? Can we just do points? And Tex was cool about it.
Yeah.
And so it's that one match is standard, like,
yeah, that's
rules.
Why the rest of the matches on the card. You go through and rewatch the whole event. Great event. You'll see this rule set being used, and then you'll see the last match, the Keenan match, has a different rule set, and that's why. It's just a standard regulation time to submission, and then winner by points.
So where do you want to start?
Fuck it, let's start with the main event. Like, the whole card was a lot of fun to watch, but let's start with the big boys. Keenan Cornelius versus Tex Johnson in the gi, and Tex pulled double duty this weekend. We saw Tex at Fight to Win in Sacramento defending his title, and then we saw him the next night here at Third Coast versus Keenan Cornelius in the gi.
Yeah.
So that is a hell of a way to spend a weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, his Fight to Win match went the whole time as well. So
yeah,
you can imagine it's probably a grueling weekend, but also you are in Keenan's territory.
You're fighting in the fucking gi with Keenan.
Yeah, dude.
I wish that on very few people.
It's like, I don't even know what to, like, it's like going into Mordor and trying to fight Sauron or some shit. You know, like, that's
the
just,
wizard.
Yeah, nah, dude, that's like.
Keenan looked really good here.
He looked really good, yeah.
He put up 34 points on text in the regulation time and scored the majority of the points, like, probably the last, like, 7.5 minutes. And you see him kind of start to work and start to get his game going. And then, like, Tex throws up initially. It's really, really aggressive with a lot of footlocks and looks for, like, a lot of esteema locks. And
yep.
Is like,
straight
trying to go under. A lot of stuff we saw him do last night, or not last night,
on Friday,
the night before on Fight to Win was a very similar game plan, like going really heavy on the feet, on the esteema locks. And you saw Keenan kind of
straight angles, yeah.
And straight angles, kind of play with it. And then you saw eventually Cornelius figured out exactly what he wanted to do and then started racking up the points and going through series of positions and just kind of racking up points on points on points and is able to eventually, time runs out, and Keenan's able to get the win. It was a really interesting match overall, but it was you just saw how good Keenan is with the passing. And I'm always surprised about where Keenan can kind of step his legs.
Yeah.
Because I forget how lanky he is sometimes.
Yeah, it was a tremendous match on Keenan's part. It really goes to show just exactly how talented he is. It's incredible. You know, it's a gi clinic. Go and watch it.
So on the next match we had Vitor Ponte. So we're going reverse order here. Next match we had Vitor Ponte. I can never say his last name. Pontus defeating Bill Cooper via heel hook. So they start out again super aggressive. Like, I like how Cooper starts. Like, Cooper usually starts out real, real aggressive. And there's one particular moment I want to talk about is Pontus at one point shoots a guillotine. They're on like the wall and the ref's not moving away from the wall, which I really like. And he shoots a guillotine on Cooper and tries to, like, throw him back off the guillotine. And Cooper is able to, like, reverse it and end up on his back.
Yeah, so this is really interesting because, you know, there are positions in jiu-jitsu where if you're on bottom, it sucks. It's uncomfortable, you know, and we've gotten, I think you go enough time and you get pretty good at preventing those or at least learning how to survive. But in this case, Bill was up against the wall in almost like a fetal position with his head getting pushed down, and it looked really uncomfortable. Like, it looked ridiculously uncomfortable. And at this point, Victor kind of like slaps on the guillotine and starts really cranking away, and Bill's able to kind of like flip over a little bit and then come up for his own attack.
Yeah, it was really impressive. He almost looks like he's going to go for a twister for is he going to fucking do that? And the commentator's like, is he going to fucking do that? And then he doesn't do it and then gets out. And then they go back and forth. And in the last, like, 30 seconds, Victor shoots back and goes to the legs and inverts and just grabs a heel hook and is able to get the win with, like, very few, very, very little time left on the match. It was a fun back and forth match. It's always fun to watch guys like Cooper compete because they do a bunch of weird
super
stuff.
Unorthodox.
And he's got really, really good hips. Like, I don't think Cooper gets enough credit for how good his hip dexterity is and how good his, like, foot dexterity is, because people kind of forget. But, man, when he grabs stuff, he just turns in really unorthodox ways, and he leaves a lot of guys guessing. So it's always – I always really like watching him compete for that reason. So another really cool match I want to touch on the card was Roberto Jimenez. I've been fucking this name up all night versus Diego Almeida.
Yeah. Like Jimenez has established himself as one of those people where when he is on a card, I'm going to watch him. His matches are always exciting.
He's a guy to watch, yeah.
It's aggressive as shit.
And this dude, he comes out. They both come out aggressive as shit on this match, and they go right into the wall, and the ref's like, I'm going to let it go. And I love that. Like, eventually they reset him to, like, the sides of the stage, and Jimenez, I always want to put that J on there, hits some, and I in my notes here, it's Jimenez hits some slick shit from the lasso guard. that's a note I took about this match.
It is an amazing, like, this is one of those matches where, like, no one is taking it easy at any given point. You know, they're shooting.
They're going for the gold.
They're going for the gold. They're shooting, like, awesome, like, ankle picks or, like, low, you know, low singles and stuff like that. And then when they're in the guard, they're being extremely active. And Jimenez is able to take the back at this point and just run away with it. It is outstanding. It is, it's just such a dominant match for Jimenez and just another impressive win.
I have a timestamp in this match. So if you go back and watch the whole video for Third Coast Grappling, at 3 hours, 25 minutes, and 5 seconds, Jimenez does some really cool shit. He has a lasso guard. He takes out the lasso guard, rolls Diego around off the lasso guard, then switches and pummels his legs out back into, like, the elevator hooks and into a butterfly guard, and then tries to do, like, a crazy sweep directly after that with his legs split while inverted. It's just the whole sequence from that whole section right there at 3 hours, 25 minutes, and 5 seconds is worth watching. You should definitely go back and watch this match because it's super exciting. Great gi work, great lapel work. It was probably my fight of the night for this card. It was very, very exciting. Whenever I write, hit some slick shit, in a note, it's a match to watch.
Yeah. So next up we have Jordan Holly defeating Christian Guzman by heel hook.
Yep. Holly jumps a scissor takedown to a heel hook, and yeah.
That's all she wrote. Hunter Newton defeats Joe
There's a little more. He doesn't get the first heel hook. He eventually, like, they go back and forth. He flattens, recovers, and then Holly sits back and gets a heel hook for the win. But that was how that started out. This gives you kind of some information about how these matches go. Like, dudes come out quick. I don't know what they were told at the beginning of this, but like we're giving yellow cards if you don't fight in the first 10 seconds or something. I don't know what it was, but it created action and it was very exciting. Like, dudes ran at each other at the beginning of the match, and like there was no big. I think there was one or two matches in the whole card that like guys spent a really long feeling each other out and like doing the hand touching, like. They got into the matches, and it was great. That 7-minute time limit worked really well for the non-black belt matches.
We have Hunter Newton defeating Joe Dirksen by ref's decision in overtime. Justin Ledet defeating Robert Perez by guillotine. Alana Kai defeating Amy Olds by guillotine.
This is a really cool guillotine. It goes from a high elbow guillotine to something that I call a front push guillotine. Basically, she's nice and high on the hands, like doing that classic Marcello. And then she basically switches to what I call like a power grip, where you go ball and socket grip, and then you push the guillotining arm up like towards their neck because you have the head in the pocket. It's a really cool guillotine finish. And you don't see it very often, but it's a really, really cool guillotine. Go back and watch this transition with the hands, especially anyone that trains with me. I use this a ton. I love this guillotine. It's super nasty and dirty, and it's great. I love watching it get finished.
Michael Gaynor defeats Dean Polino by pressure.
This was a quick match from the big guys. Looks like Mike Gaynor gets like on top of Paulo and like, I couldn't exactly tell what he tapped him with. It might have been like just like they were big boys, big dudes. So I don't know what kind of pressure it was, but it's listed as pressure in the results. I watched it like twice. I couldn't tell what it was, and I was like, okay, I guess it's pressure.
Taps to pressure.
Yeah,
that was going to be Viana's like nickname for himself.
Taps to pressure.
Taps to pressure. Yeah. it happens to all. I guess all of us, even on professional.
Dude, I've tapped him, guys.
Yeah.
I felt like I was going to die. I was like, yep, so you got to tap,
Yeah. We have Roberto Rivas defeating Efrain Rodriguez by points.
Dude, okay, so one thing I've noticed here is everyone that wins gets a belt.
Fuck yeah.
A slick-ass belt.
Fuck yeah.
I was like, oh, I want a belt. My 2019 resolution is to win a belt. So I would really like to win a fucking belt, Emil.
Yeah.
Like a Naga belt, a Third Coast belt, a New Breed belt.
Here's another promotion where you can do it.
I would love to win a belt. That would be great.
We have Victor Cibra defeating Hector Da Silva by points. Randy Baker defeats Duke Edwards by choke in overtime. William Tackett defeats Colin McKelland by head and arm choke. Mackenzie Mantaris defeats Beverly Praca by guillotine. Jevin Lussinger defeats Logan Gonzalez by points.
This is a cool match where this rule set has both. It's like if a guy can keep passing and winning, like this was cool because he had 10 points, and as soon as he got the pass, he got 3 points, got the 12, or he had 9. He had an amount of points where he needed one additional point. He got a pass, and then he was able to win. So it's cool to see a guy like try to – you see guys starting to choose different positions based on how many points they need. Because, like, okay, I can work the back finish, or if I get one more point here, I can win. So I like the rule set for that because it fosters action because you get rewarded for it. If you can get 11 points, you win. It's first to 11. So you can be 9 to 10. Next guy to score is going to win. It's exciting.
Calvin Nguyen defeats Robert Ezel by armbar. Jacob Alfin defeats Ken Alfaro by points in overtime. Angelus McFarlane defeats De Niro Kelly by ref's decision in overtime. Nate Suarez defeats Lilia Cantu by armbar. Bolivar Panera defeats Jackson Kennedy by points. And Brody Banks defeats Emilio Cantu by armbar.
Super fun event.
Yeah.
Go back and watch it. I always love when an inaugural event hits off. There's a couple problems with some of the commentary audio. It's a little quiet in some places, but the matches and the rule set really make up for it. Highly recommend go back and watch it. Really great event. Enjoy the shit out of it. So onto a recap of Fight to Win 97 in Sacramento, California. This event paid a total of $34,720 in salaries and commissions and was headlined by Black Belt Tex Johnson versus Elliot Kelly in the Masters Heavyweight Nogi title.
Yeah, this was an interesting match. I wonder what Tex's strategy was. Like, he initially pulled seated guard, but then started doing, like, really aggressive stand-up, like, a few minutes later into the match.
Repeatedly pulled seated guard for most of the match. Like,
yeah.
He would do aggressive stand-up, and he would sit. And he would go for, like, an inversion on a leg or a foot. Like, you can tell he really wanted to, like, invert under Kelly and grab some sort of ankle lock or heel hook. What it looked like to me, and a steam
lock. He was starting to, like, get those positions, but, like, I feel like never solidified it exactly.
I don't know if he's looking for AD, like, trying to play ADCC rules or, like, exactly what he's doing, but it was an interesting, and it paid off for him. He gets this split decision win.
He got some nice, like, Ashigarami positions, just didn't get, like, you know, up to the point where it was like...
Yeah, you
know,
saw Kelly identify and go, oh, shit, and start to, like, really aggressively, like, do the escape.
Yep.
And Tex was, like, on it and rolling through. And you saw he entered probably 3 or 4 times. He started to enter into the legs and start to get deep. And you see Kelly identify that he was kind of getting to the point of no return and go, all right, and just disengage, get up, step out. And then Tex would usually stand up, re-engage on the feet, and then pull again. And that was kind of how the match went.
So Tex wins by split decision, and he has a busy weekend because... He goes the next day to face Keenan Cornelius in the Gi. So
yeah, we kind of did this out of sequence here, but yeah. So this is
props to you, Tex.
Dude, yeah, awesome. Like doing two events in two different, like Sacramento, California to Dallas is like not a huge flight, but it's a flight part of the way across the country.
But also like two vastly different rule sets. You know, no Gi submission only to Gi points
versus Keenan.
Versus
so like that's
Keenan,
dude.
Yeah.
Props to him for taking two tough matches. He's prepping for ADCC. Like we're probably gonna see him compete really frequently. He's doing, like, Kasai. He has a whole gang of stuff lined up for ADCC. So, like, I'm looking forward to covering him for, you know, the lead-up to ADCC and then ADCC. It should be real interesting.
So, we got Bryant Pangelion defeating Tim Freeman by split decision, and this was fight of the night for the black belts.
Yo, you taking my shit, Emil.
Yeah. You right. Sleep. I
changing of the guards. I have my notes in front of me.
This was a great match. It was really nice takedowns and really good high guard.
So we saw Tim working like a rubber guard and like a high double. It's called a double bagger is a position.
I, I call it a high guard, but, you know, I don't know.
It's basically you have the double high guard where you almost have your calves on the top of their shoulders.
Right.
And I think the position is called a double back guard. There might be a lower position, but it's basically a double rubber guard.
Really aggressive passing attempts here. Like, yeah. Really, really aggressive. This is a great match.
You saw Bryant, like, posting super far out and, like, trying to drive his caught knee in the half guard through and out. It was just really interesting to see a guy like that confident at that distance trying to throw that knee cut.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Great match. Manny Rocha defeats Rich Bothan by decision. Gustavo Henriquez defeats Bruce Tafoya by triangle.
I enjoyed this match. This is a super technical. I believe these guys are masters in the gi, and Gustavo just crawls up inch by inch by inch. Eventually, he kind of like hops the leg over for the triangle and just takes away space over like multiple minutes. And eventually, he's able to like work the angle, get the head across, and get the arm. And get the choke. It was just really, really nice to watch slow pressure jiu-jitsu work over a course of minutes. I enjoy the match a lot.
Yeah, we see that later on in the match or in the event for one of the submissions of the night. But for the next match, we have Mark De La Cruz defeating Rocky Fort by Darce, and this was amazing.
29 seconds.
Yeah, and it was like this was off of a flying triangle attempt.
Yeah,
and Rocky was seated, and so Mark just launches this awesome flying triangle attempt, spins around, sinks the arm in, and has a really nice hip switch to step over the finish. I think this should have won submission of the night. That's my humble opinion. It was great. Great finishing sequence.
I like the submission of the night. You thought this would win it?
Yeah.
That's reasonable. I mean, they're both dope submissions. So, but it's super fast, Darce. 29 seconds
yep.
to get that win.
So we have Rodrigo Cardoso defeating Davin Maxwell by armbar. We have Jason Butcher defeating Felipe Braggio by decision. Angel Lopez defeats Louis Moreno by decision. Chad Bingham defeats David Henson by armbar. Dom Hoskins defeats Miguel Augusto by bow and arrow. Ricardo Pacho Feliciano defeats Ernest Mello by armbar. And Maine, this is...
I like this armbar. This is submission of the night.
There you
the black
go.
Belts.
There you go.
As I was reading them, okay. As you were blowing through some stuff I have notes on, I'm like, do I want to talk about this? Don't talk about this? Because I have notes on all of them, and you were just like reading through. I was like,
So this is great top pressure by Ricardo. And
from like the north-south position.
Yeah.
And he sits there for a while, and he really controls the shoulders very, very well.
And basically the submission is a very nice near side arm bar, almost like chicken wing style.
We saw the exact same. We saw Colin Studebart hit the exact same submission at Fight to Win Pro, back when it was Pro, Maryland 53. He basically cooks the guy for like 7.5 minutes in this north-south position and this jumps up at like the last 10 seconds and just finishes the arm.
Really nice. Like I said, I like the flying triangle into Darce, but you know. This is also really good.
I'm a sucker for these like weird position finishes.
So, on to the brown belts. We have Cassio Pascio defeats Elizabeth Mitrovic by split decision.
Becomes the women's brown belt welterweight champion.
This was an awesome match. This was a great match. It has like a really funny moment towards the end where with about a minute left, Elizabeth actually has a deep inside Ashigarami, and so she has to reap to get this.
Right, which technically is illegal per the gi rules for IBJJF and for Fight to Win.
And she has a reaping position for like a minute or two.
Yeah.
And like there's confusion.
There's confusion all around because it seems like the ref's confused. It seems like the commentator's confused. I was definitely confused.
The commentator was confused because the ref wasn't calling it for a long time.
And then, out of nowhere, the ref goes, all right, DQ. And everyone kind of goes, what the fuck? And, and then
Seth gets on and is awesome. He's like, nah, like.
This is a title match. We're not going to DQ in a title match. Reset him in the position.
Start her over.
Keep going.
Yeah.
And, because normally, I've been to a couple Fight to Win rule meetings. If you're in a legal position, the ref will warn you again. If the ref continues to warn you, then you get DQ'd. It didn't seem like there was a warning involved. And this went just straight.
There was nothing.
Like, IBJJF, which they used to just straight DQ you at the beginning. So it's like there's no warning.
But also, like, let it go on for, like, a couple minutes.
But it was,
you know?
It was
like super weird. But the crowd went fucking nuts when Seth got on there and like was like, keep it going because it's exciting.
That's exciting. Like, yeah. The match was a good, interesting matchup. Like, I was enjoying watching. Like, what's going to happen here? It was really interesting.
And fortunately, Kasia didn't get injured.
No.
So, like, what the fuck? Just keep going.
It's like, okay, her leg's not broken. Like, let's keep fighting because, like, I don't know. The ref probably should have called that earlier. Again, I watched it a couple times. I was still trying to figure out exactly where the legs were.
Hopefully.
Emil actually had to walk me through. He was like, oh, this is why you can't have the legs. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense to me.
Hopefully we can get some inside perspective from them, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So,
but it was a good match. I mean, I really enjoyed the
phenomenal match
overall, and it shows that you, like, if you put the Reapin in the gi, your leg doesn't just explode. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
And it's hard to pass from there.
Yeah.
So I like the match. It was a good match.
So next up we have Daniel Werner defeating Troy Everett by decision. So
the walkout king.
The walkout king.
He walked out to a funny, like, he always walks out to, like, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, or like Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Always makes life. He's having a good time.
He's a pop fan.
I don't know what he is. He is something.
Going into this match, Troy was 6-6. You know, he did a really good job defending at some point. Like, there were some really deep submission attempts. Daniel gets some really deep arm bars a couple of times in this match, you know, like pretty much getting there, you know, as he wanted to.
We saw him use some rubber guard in the gi. I think we're starting to see more of that. Again, in my note here, it says, mention Keenan's organic video. Because I was like, ooh, I got to bring that up. We've already brought that up, so don't need to bring it up again.
Yeah. We have Antoine Green-Gibson defeating Sean Joseph by decision. Robert Marlowe defeating Scott Chapman by decision. Clint Treadway defeats Daniel LeBeau by decision. Mikey Singh-Hawthy defeats Thomas Haley by armbar. This was fucking awesome.
How do you feel about that, Emil?
This was great. The transitions that Mikey was hitting were just the sequences were beautiful. He almost got an armbar. And later he gets to, like, a BJ Penn pass and a near back take to secure the armbar.
Explain a BJ Penn pass for those who might not know what a BJ Penn pass is.
So
you kind of gloss over that real quick.
It's a half guard pass, and BJ Penn does this, like, he was the one who kind of, like, made this.
Yeah, he didn't invent it, but he made it famous, definitely.
And he just, you know, BJ Penn had amazing leg dexterity. He would just grab his own foot and snake it across for passes. This was.
So go look up BJ Penn pass, because there's a couple highlights of him in MMA doing it, and you're just like, God damn, it's beautiful when it's done well.
And, you know, this just ends with Mikey almost taking the back, but then just being able to knock out an armbar. It's like this again, I feel like, you know, Emil's opinion, but this should be submission of the night.
Emil's opinion. We need a whole section of the podcast. Emil's opinion.
Emil's hot takes. It was great. Go back and watch this. This is really, really tremendous. We have Vince Barbosa defeating Michael Mallett by split decision.
And that was fight of the night for the brown belt.
This is a tremendous match, and I think deservedly fight of the night.
Yeah.
There's no stand-up here, but, like, really excellent sweeps and leg attacks and toe holds, heel hooks, knee bars.
It's an active match. Like, I like the fight of the win. Usually their fight of the nights are really active matches or impressive matches for both competitors. Like, when you look at the results of fight to win, you look at submission of the night and fight of the night. If you're going to watch anything, those are the matches to watch. Like, from the purple belts, from the kids and teens, all the way to the black belts. Like, those are the fire, hot fire matches to watch. This is no different.
Yeah, so then we have
Damian
Wright. Oh, by the way, like, you could kind of tell that Vince Barbosa was, like, a Henzo guy, because, like, throughout this entire match, it was pretty much all leg attacks. I can't think of any attacks above the waist, really.
I'm thinking back. Yeah. I don't think I recall. There may have been, but yeah, you might. It just was a leg battle.
Yeah, it was a leg battle. So then we have Damian Wright defeating Tony Perez by Ezekiel.
And that was submission of the night for the brown belts.
So this is where I strongly disagree with submission of the night. I think.
I mean, you can say it, man. Earlier. It's our show. Like, you can say whatever you want. I mean, if it's horrible, I'm going to have to cut it out like I do with Josh all the time. But, like, you want to say.
So Damien's basically doing, like, I can't call it pressure passing so much as just crushing on top half and spamming Ezekiel's. Like,
if it works, it works.
Yeah.
If you're trying to sub the guy, and that's your good shit, and you hit him with your good shit,
I'm not hating on the sequence. I'm just like, yo, like, the transitions that Mikey Hathi was doing to Thomas Haley were like so impressive and so versatile. And
yeah,
this was
but
just
you
like,
can't win submission on that on decision though.
No, that was a submission. It was an armbar.
My bad, I'm looking at the wrong note.
So yeah, it's, you know, he eventually gets to Ezekiel, like even the corner of Tony Perez is like, watch the Ezekiel. You know, it's just like, okay, here it comes. Yep. Yeah, he's going to do it.
But
oh,
I appreciate him out. I appreciate that
a
trite of, like, you know what he's going for. It doesn't matter. He's still going to hit it. Like, I do appreciate that for, like, from a technical perspective. I'm like, I know that's that guy's good shit, and he's shown me that's his good shit, and he still hits me with his good shit.
It's meh.
Next match.
David Acosta defeats Trinidad Bautista by heel hook. Anthony Mercado defeats Sam Tanner by decision.
On to the purple belt results. We have Spencer Janna defeating Ian Johnson via decision. We have Jacob Pueblo defeating Manny Mendoza via triangle Kimura, submission of the night. This was nifty. I like this. He's in like a triangle position, and then he's able to get the Kimura on that outside arm that's not trapped in the triangle. Deservedly submission of the night for the purple belts. We had Vijay Sama defeating Joey Taylor via decision. We have James Lampe defeating Mitchell Torres via armbar. We had Brandon Heath, I'm whenever you want to mail. Stan Heath defeating Jamie Valor Morena via decision. We had Robert Parks defeating Adam Gilbert via decision. We had Joanne Pendle defeating Nicola Aguiar via decision. We had Billy English defeating Nathan Dunas via cross choke. We had Nick Paca defeating Bryce Sexton via armbar. We had Anthony Kumadal defeating Andre B via decision. We had John Tai defeating Larry White via decision. We had Albert Tapia pulling double duty, defeating Nico
Lozada
via rear naked choke, and that was fight of the night for the purple belts. We had Patty Jean Southworth defeating Rekha Bazemore via decision. On to the teen results.
Arjuna Brown defeats Hector Morales by triangle.
That was fight of the night for the kids and teens.
Spencer Herr defeats Jesse Reyes by triangle armbar.
So that was fight to win Sacramento. Dude, tons of submissions on this, fan. A lot of fun matches back and forth. It is good to have fight to win back.
Yes.
I missed them. It has been... Let me look when it was the last one. Yeah, Fight to Win Fresno back in the beginning of December, and December 7th. It's been that long since Fight to Win. I'm like, man, where you guys been? What are you, taking vacation, enjoying the holidays? I went events meal every weekend, or 39 events a year.
There was some awesome jiu-jitsu this weekend,
dude,
and we're getting back into
it.
It
was
again.
A good week. I think it's funny that you and I are both really excited again, because before, like, towards the end of the year, we were both like, God damn, that's a lot of jiu-jitsu.
Like, yeah,
now we've had a couple
awards,
weeks off.
There's some stuff. Now, yeah, we got time to recoup.
We're like,
and...
oh, fuck yeah, I'm happy to watch jiu-jitsu for 6 to 18 hours a weekend.
Fucking A, right?
We got the Euros next week, so tune in for that. Strap in for that. So that's all I got for Fight to Win 97 in Sacramento. You got anything else, Emil?
That's it.
All right, on to the next one. So on to our preview for the 2018 IBJJF European Championships. For these large previews, we just talk about really the black belts in the adult division. We go through the names for the guys that we want to see, and we hope that we see these matchups.
Yep. So we got the adult male roosters. We got Christian Woodman C.
We got Tomoyoshi Hashimoto.
We
got George Nakamura. We got Nobuhiro Sawada. Those are some big names. We got Koji Shimamoto. I love that we got a lot of the Japanese fighters in these European events because we see them less in the American events. And so it's always exciting to see, like, if you put it a little closer, they can come to it. It's awesome. We got 9 total in the Roosterweight division. On to the light featherweight division.
We have Kennedy Marcial, who is – that's Cabrini's kid.
Yep.
So great
Dude,
to see
the last
him
name always fucking throws me off every time. I'm just like, oh, yeah, Marcial. That's, like, that's Cabrini's kid.
Yeah. We got Joao Miao. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
We
got Hiago George in this.
Hideki Yamada.
Yeah. This is a division of 11. On to the male featherweights, a division of 12. We have Cole Franson. We just saw him versus Bill Cooper a couple months ago at Fight to Win. Might have been even the last event. Fight to Win 96 might have been headlined by those two. I don't quite remember.
Paulo Miao. Is this the first of the... of the major events that Paulo is back for? Pans.
No. Was he back at Pans?
I don't think he was.
No, I think he was still suspended.
I think this is his
is the first major he's been back at. So I would put him as a strong favorite because this is the first time we've seen him since his world win.
Yeah, I feel like he looks like mortal now. You know, like he looks
beatable.
Mortal
now.
I don't know. Like, he's been beat a few times since.
Yeah. We got Isaac Dodolin in this division.
Yep.
We have Gabriel Mangone, and we got Leonardo I can never get his last name. Fernando Segorio in that division. That's division of 12. On to the lightweight division, a stacked division with 18.
Johnny Gripo, yep. Lucas Lepre.
Yep. Jeremiah Jackson. We got Masahiro Iwasaki.
Yep.
I'm excited about that. We got Tommy Pulkenen here. Let's see who else.
Kyosaurus.
Oh, shit. There he is. Just coming off his King of Mats event. And yeah. We have, let's see.
Levi Jones-Leary, too, from Unity.
Oh, yeah. There he is. Yep. So that looks like a fun division. On to the middleweights, a division of 18. Goddamn, these keep getting bigger and bigger the further you go up. We got Izaki Behence there. I put him as a strong favorite. We got Michael Lira Jr. as well. We got Espen Mathiesen. We got Tommy Langacker. He was coaching King of Mats. Who was he coaching?
I can't remember.
The only non-Brazilian guy that was there that wasn't DJ Jackson.
Espen,
yeah, sorry. Jesus. My bad. Had,
you know, the you guy know, whose name like, you just read.
An audible brain fart, and then you just like you hear the wheels spin. That's what just happened there. I'm leaving that in.
Manuel Hibamar is in this one.
Yep, Diego Romalo's in this as well.
Yeah.
So we have, yeah, this is a stacked division.
Medium heavy, we have Claudio Calasanz.
We got Hulk.
Yep, Hudson Mateus. Who else?
We got Holanda Montero.
Yeah.
A division of 10. Under the heavyweight division, we have a division of 7. We got Adam Wardzinski. We got Kanan Duarte. We got Jackson Santos. This, I hope we see Wardzinski versus Duarte.
Yeah. That would be
I would put Duarte in the favor here to take these Euros. Like, he has just been... He has looked like a monster recently.
Absolutely. So, in super heavy...
A division of 10.
We have...
James Popolo. We got Felipe Andrew Leonardo Silva. We have Helton Silva Jr. And a bunch of other men with
Eastern European names.
Eastern European names. I'm not going to butcher. Onto the ultra heavyweight division, a division of 8.
We have
Tanner Rice.
Yep.
Victor Hugo, Igor Schneider, Ottavio Souza Nalati. De Souza Nalati. Dude, yep. he is huge. He is legit.
So
that's the men. Onto the women, we have the roosterweight division. We have Maisa Bastos in the roosterweight division, Serena Grabrielli, Natalie Calero, and one woman's name I cannot pronounce.
Arantxa Perez. In the light feather, we have Amelia Tukanen and Larissa Carvalho and Amal Amjid.
Division of 3. Under the featherweights, another division of 3. We have Anna Carolina Schmidt. We have Fionn Davies, who I think is probably the favorite to take this one, and Gabrielle Fletcher. Under the black belt lightweight for the women, we have a total of 4. Bianca Basilo. We have Charlotte Von Baumgarten. How do you say that last name?
Baumgarten. Yeah, you
got it. Okay, I got it correct. I thought I had completely jacked it up. Under the middleweights, we have Samantha Lee Cook. We have Maria Vieira Santos. And we have give me that name, Mio.
Tatiana Dos Santos.
Okay, division of 4. Under the medium heavyweights, we got Luisa Montero and Claudio Doval. That will be a fun matchup.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that matchup. On the heavyweights. That was, sorry, medium heavy. On the heavyweights now, division of 2. We have Claire Thivron, and we have Natalie DeJesus. In the super heavyweights, we have a division of 3. We have Jessica Flowers. We have Venla Lukenen, and we have Clara Sandy.
It's going to be awesome.
So. The Euros are always fun. It's one of the big four or five major tournaments of the year. It's the one that kicks off the year every year, and you start to see how everyone's going to look in 2019. It's usually a pretty good barometer for, like, the guys that aren't U.S. or Brazil-based, like, what right. they're going to do. Because it gives those guys an opportunity to showcase, because the distance they have to travel isn't as far. I like that it's that big, major European event.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Should be a lot of fun. On to our preview of Fight to Win 98 in San Jose, California. This event is main evented by 185-pound black belt Nogi Masters title, Ron Kessler versus Jake Shields.
That's going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think we're seeing Jake Shields do more grappling events. Like,
me too.
We see him do it from time to time. We've seen him on Polaris. We've seen him on Fight to Win. We've seen him other stuff. But I always love when he comes back and does grappling because he's a really fucking good grappler.
He's an awesome grappler. And just in general, like, I just like Jake Shields. He's a cool dude.
You because he talks shit to
Dylan Dennis.
To Dylan, is that why?
There's that, but I mean,
he just seems like a cool guy in general. And yeah. So, like, I like that. Like, as he's fighting less and less, I think he actually might be retired now. Like, he's again engaged in grappling, and we get to see him continue to perform for a Masters title here. It's a very fitting main event.
Yeah,
230-pound black belt gi match: Patrick Welsh versus Jason Cummings.
195-pound black belt no-gi match, Mauricio Alonso versus Andrew Bowers.
190-pound no-gi match, Benji Silva versus Carlos Rocha.
185-pound black belt no-gi match, Isaiah Wright versus Nick Green.
Yo, I'm excited. We saw Nick Green. Nick Green is a ref for Fight to Win really frequently. He's the guy that we set after the odd foot position in the brown belt title fight this today. Basically, he comes out, he fixed the problem because the current ref that was there was kind of not fixing it effectively. So he came out, fixed the problem, and got it going again. I really enjoy watching Nick Green compete. He's a guy, whenever he wins, he like does breakdancing on the stage. Super exciting to watch. Excited for this matchup.
185-pound black belt no-gi match, Kevin Kopecky versus Gustavo Andrade.
185-pound black belt no-gi match, Sam Tecco versus Phil Baroni.
165-pound black belt gi match, Chris Caldiron versus Aaron Zabalos.
155-pound black belt gi match, Caleb Khan versus Jeremiah... Give me the name, Emil.
Labiano.
Thank you.
155-pound black belt gi match, Danny Bohigian versus Shane Torres.
That was actually correct, I think. 130-pound black belt gi match, Taylor... Oh, man. Do it, Emil.
McCorriston versus Anthony Figueroa.
Thanks, Emil.
120-pound black belt gi match, Christina Barlin versus Rita Gribben.
170-pound brown belt no-gi title, Alan Sanchez versus Aaron Wilson. And then we move on to the brown belts. Let me look through real quick if there's any particular brown belts. We got Mikey Gonzalez on the card. We got Derek Van Ness on the card. We have Baldwin Chu on the card. So it looks like a really good card. Definitely tune in for that. So we just got the phone with Elizabeth Mitrovic. Wanted to clarify a couple things from the previous fight to win, Fight to Win 97 in Sacramento. We're talking about the title match that with the odd knee position. So what happened is she was going for a saddle position. So the saddle is legal in Fight to Win in the gi, but just certainly you have to enter it. And she was talking about, yeah, she went back and re-looked at the match, and she was not in that position. She was not... Basically, that's not the position she was trying to end up in, so she ended up being in that position.
But what we suspected was the case, and that was that the ref was not, like, usually they give you a warning, you know, in a match, like, in the heat of the moment, like, you're not considering, like, okay, is this person's leg on my outside or my inside, and inside is legal and outside is not. You know, you're just trying to work your position. And, you know, the ref is supposed to be there to be cognizant of it.
For Fight to Win, usually what they do is what they, in the standard rules meetings that I've been to for Fight to Win, is the ref is going to, if you're in a legal position, the ref will warn you again, like basically like, hey, you're not in a position that you can be in. You need to move your position. And so it seemed like that she wasn't getting that feedback from the ref. And then eventually, like, the ref goes, okay, in IBJJF, you just get an immediate DQ. But they were in the position long enough. So it was just kind of some odd misunderstanding. But she clarified that that's what's going on. That's what she was looking for. And basically, again, I'm really happy the match got to continue to go. It was an exciting match.
Yep.
And so I do appreciate the clarification there from Liz on that. It's awesome.
Yeah. Outstanding. Hope to see her soon.
Yeah. Looks to be great. So that was that. Wanted to clarify that. So this is pretty much the end of the show now. Usually we bullshit for a couple of minutes. What do you got going on in the mail this week?
This is a slow week.
Got Euros.
Yeah.
Get ready for that European action.
That's right.
Videos coming out at weird times of the day.
That's right.
There's a time difference that I'm not even going to begin to try to calculate.
That's probably 6 hours, but yeah.
I mean, like I said, I'm not even going to begin to try to calculate what that time difference is.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
There's two other events that are going on. So, kind of odd. Originally, Marianas Pro. They're running two events. They're running a Japan event and a Korea event. They've changed that, so I'm not sure if they're running both of them now or if they've changed the location, but on my calendar I have both of them as listed. So I have flyers saved for both of them as well. I'm not sure what event they are running, but one of those events will happen, and we'll probably cover that again this following week. But looking down the pipe for the next for this month, end of the month, we have Rise 6. We'll preview that next week. We have Serious Grappling 3. We have Fight to Win 99 in Scottsdale, Arizona. In the beginning of next month, we got Kasai Super Series in Dallas. So I am super excited for that. And then,
dude, Fight to Win 100 in Honolulu.
Fight to Win 100 in Honolulu, Hawaii. Dude, that card should be insane.
Yeah.
Then we got Pantheon Grappling the same day. So, dude, the second of next month is crazy. We have three big events all happening at the same day. So gear in. We are back to our pretty much standard schedule, and it's going to be a good one.
Back in our bullshit.
So as always, you know, I've been Maine.
I've been Emil.
We are the Grappling Rewind. We'll see you on the mats. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google Plus.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.